Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Adam, why is this episode unlike all other episodes?
Because it is a Coco No-No episode.
I almost forgot. Another Coco No-No?
Incredible!
Coco No-No?
It's a hell of a combination.
Drink or be gone.
I think I've had enough already.
This is gonna help me?
The antidote!
Another Coco No-No?
Bullshit!
Bullshit!
Incredible!
Another Coco No-No? Coco No-No?
Coco No-No?
Coco No-No?
More isn't better.
It is. We rolled one, and if I understand the off-mic communication correctly, you have actually prepared some tiki drinks for this one.
I have. Well, I mean, not to correct you, but I prepared a tiki drink times four.
Whoa!
Do you ever just get it in you? Like, I'm dedicated to the drunk right now. Mm. Like, I'm ready to go.
You've been in a 100 square foot room by yourself for the last 2 weeks. You deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about to expand the square footage of my mind by way of a tiki drink. Ben, would you like to know what I'm drinking?
I'm very curious. I'm very, very curious.
All right. I did a little bit of research, and I let my fingers do the Googling, and I found a site that could tell me what tiki drinks I can make with the stuff that I have or could easily get, and one of the ones that I thought I could most easily make was something called a Hale Kulani. Have you had this?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know it by heart.
Here's what's in it. We got overproof bourbon.
Whoa.
I have plenty of that. So it's the overproof bourbon backbone, and then pineapple juice, lemon juice, orange juice as the acid sour, a bar spoon grenadine, half an ounce of demerara syrup or brown sugar syrup, and a dash of Angostura bitters. Now, I made four of these.
Yeah.
I made a large format version of this, which I have filled my... I know I said I was going to go coconut.
Yeah.
Cup this time, but I wanted to go clear glass because I wanted to see the color. I looked at these ingredients and I was like, well, this might be a pleasant shade of red. It is not, Ben. It is brand new motor oil brown.
Yeah, it's kind of an orangey brown, I would say.
And that leads to a question.
Isn't that an unpleasant color?
Do you feel like most tiki drinks come in strange glasses that are opaque because they probably don't look good? Like they're all... Most of them are going to be orangey brown, you think?
I think that is probably why a lot of tiki drinks come in mugs. I was in Santa Barbara with my wife over the weekend, and I ordered a drink called a Miami Vice at this place that we went to. And I've actually seen this before. A Miami Vice is a combination pina colada and strawberry daiquiri.
Oh, yeah. I've had those in Hawaii.
And I've seen them done up and down. This place did something. I have no idea how they accomplished it. It was a side-by-side Miami Vice.
Whoa, so, cool.
Like, the glass was shaped like a conch on its side. And somehow half of it was pink
frozen beverage and the other half was white frozen beverage. And there was like a pretty like unbroken line of division down the middle.
Wow. It's like a conch of plenty of booze.
It was delicious.
Well, what are you drinking now?
Well, I had a bit of a tiki crisis when I got into my kitchen because I had looked earlier in the freezer and spotted some frozen pineapple. So I was like, well, I'm going to make something with
as well have my ropes taste good.
Yeah. I'm going to have great tasting ropes and a tiki beverage hang with my friend Adam. And I went in there expecting to throw frozen pineapple chunks into the blender and chase it with rum and some other stuff. I get the blender down. I put a bunch of rum into the blender. Then I go over to the freezer to grab the bag of frozen pineapple. It was not frozen pineapple, but frozen mixed root vegetables, Adam. So I abandoned that
plan. Tell me that you made a savory tiki drink.
Yeah, it's parsnips, rutabagas, and carrots.
Wow.
Oh, give me my veggie shake.
Yeah, so I had to kind of pivot midstream. And so what I've done is I made a blender drink, and the blender drink I made is kind of a tiki throw things in until it tastes good. So
I think you are uniquely able to do that.
I have filled a Vitamix blender almost three quarters to the top. I've nearly overfilled this blender pitcher.
Wow.
Just pouring rum in and then putting in some lime juice and then adding something sweet and then, you know, giving it a taste and be like, it's not strong enough. Add a little bit more rum. Could use a little bit more sour. Add a little bit more lime juice. And by the time I had it balanced the way I wanted it, I had a great big beverage. So I think you and I are in similar straits as far as how much alcohol we have on hand for this.
Hey, hold it up to the camera again. I want to screen grab that.
I've chosen a Kirk tiki mug for my beverage vessel.
Cool. Wow. Looking good over there. I think we have the quantity right. That's for sure.
Yeah. And let's see if we can bring some good quality to today's episode of The Greatest Generation.
It's almost a certainty, Ben, whenever we have a drinking episode. It's going to be a classic.
Or a fucking train wreck. One or the other.
Well, train wreck allows for a great pivot, Ben.
Yeah.
A spectacular destruction of a giant vehicle. Also on the menu today, boys, at the end of Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 9, Year of Hell, Part 2.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers to you, Ben.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
Oh, man. I mean, the drink I made is delicious.
I did that thing where it called for a lot of sweet.
Yeah.
And I halved the sweet on my Hale Kulani.
Yeah.
And I think it's better for it.
I think you got to be real careful with those online recipes.
You can always add sweet later.
A lot of them are going to get you into the cruise ship territory of sweetness, and you don't want that.
Oh, Ben, before I forget, let's get into the bro zone.
That's a good point. We got to get into the bro zone. And if I perish during this episode, Adam, bury me facing down.
You know, even before seeing that episode, I would have buried you face down, for sure.
But now you can, like, play this recording to my wife, and she'll know that, you know.
Yeah. When she glimpses the recording, she'll understand.
Mm-hmm. Adam, it's day 133 of the Year of Hell.
Sure is.
Not even halfway in.
Janeway's done the thing that all starship captains do when it's their last best idea. Fighting a superior enemy.
Yeah.
Taking that ship into the nebula.
Yeah, they're hiding in the nebula. She says that they've been left vulnerable to spatial anomalies. And I was like, damn, like, are there so many spatial anomalies that, like, most of them you don't even notice? Like, when a spatial anomaly is big enough to, like, penetrate the ship is when it rises to the importance of having an episode about it.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. They have bailed. They've bailed on all of it in this nebula. I wonder if this is a couple of episodes that is only possible in the digital starship era of Star Trek. Like, could they have ever practically modeled this ship damage over the last couple episodes?
No, I don't think so. I think that, yeah. And I think that the way this episode goes is almost entirely a product of the digital starship era.
Yeah, I think so too.
We actually get to see inside the ship where some of this pink smoke has penetrated the hull. And
you hear this, like, as soon as you board a Federation starship, if pink smoke enters the cabin, you put the mask on yourself and then Ensign Kim in that order.
If you are traveling with an Ensign Kim.
Yeah. If you have a lap Ensign Kim.
Kim in arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and try to save yourself before you save Ensign Kim's dong.
Right. I mean, it doesn't seem like Janeway is that interested in saving herself. She is almost single-minded in her interest in self-sacrifice, and this is the scene that kind of sets that tone. Really continues a tone from the last episode.
I want you off your feet for the next 48 hours.
Impossible. I've got too much work to do.
She's marching around her begirdled bridge with the EMH following behind her, and he is really pissed about how many liberties she's taking with her own safety.
If Ensign Kim made a musical instrument that was like a cranky old instrument that like the Arcade Fire would use, but made it out of stuff he found on the bridge, do you think he'd call that a hurdy-gurder?
Yes, I think probably.
Okay.
I mean, I think any Star Trek character could do that. I don't know why it has to be Ensign Kim specifically.
Well, I mean, he's there.
Yeah.
And he's not blind.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are two qualities of one of the last remaining seven crew people on this ship.
Did the EMH ordering the captain to stand down and not be in command anymore enter your head as a thing that he might suggest in this scene? Because she is like ordering him to treat her for her,
yeah,
her bad lungs. And he's like, you need to stop. You need to take a break.
Doctor's orders.
Captain's orders. Trioxin now.
She didn't want to look weak in front of Kim, so she took the full hit of the pink cloud.
Yeah.
Like right into the lungs.
Yeah.
And
she took her mask off. She took a big lung full of pink cloud and said, the scorpion is ready.
Yeah.
It intimidated, yeah, Kim.
As Rick Ross would put it, it burned her chest. And she's walking around the bridge just hacking up. And that's, yeah, because her lungs have been burned.
Yeah. The alveoli are singed.
Yeah.
The ship is in really bad shape. One nacelle is all the way dead. The other is offline. They can't really move. They can't really do anything. And the situation is really dire. And that's how we get into theme.
I love how you hear it and you love how you see it, because in this pan around the bridge, I mean, the passage of time as told via visual,
yeah,
is so apparent here. Like by the time we get to the view screen, it seems as though there's some sort of like welded together shield,
yeah,
outside of the view screen, which is broken and is like just open space.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. Don't like that.
When we come back from the title sequence, Chakotay is in jail on the Time Weapon ship. His mustache has really come in and is nice and full when they open the door on this jail cell.
I don't think they anticipated this reaction because, like, you can tell what the show is going for. Passage of time through facial hair.
Mustache.
Right.
It's a technique as old as film itself. Like, train coming into station, it's in that film. You, yeah, see the train conductor, you see his beard growing up there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when your actor looks this good with facial hair, you don't get what the episode's trying to make you feel. I look at Chakotay here and I'm like, God damn, he looks awesome.
Yeah.
He is not suffering at all. But that's not what the episode's trying to make us feel. Like, this is supposed to look like suffering.
You've had us in isolation for 2 months. We've been scanned, poked, and prodded.
The episode threw me for such a loop because the next scene he comes in like clean shaven and I was like yelling at the TV screen, give him back the stash! No!
Like, the episode's like, look at how this man has been abused.
Mustache.
But the abuse happened between the cell and the dinner scene when they had to forcibly shave him.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah.
You hate to see it. He is let into Anorax's dining room, where Anorax is like stroking the triangle-shaped box with his wife's hair in it.
Yeah.
It's a hair doll. Yeah, it's gross, right?
There's a big feast laid out in front of them. They're talking about how intransigent Paris is.
Yeah, this is a tough scene because all Anorax wants to do is talk shit about Chakotay's buddy. And that puts Chakotay in an awkward spot.
It's not a great look for Anorax.
But Paris shows up. And in another classic, like, this is what they're going for and it isn't what they get kind of situation, you can't put Paris in a deep V and not expect some real power moves.
Yeah.
And Paris just looks fucking great in this thing.
I mean, these guys, they've been in isolation for 2 months and suddenly they just look fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah.
Like, they look like they've been on vacation for 2 months.
Yeah, they're looking strong and good.
Yeah.
And they're invited to eat at this buffet that the Kurtwood Smith character has put together.
Yeah.
And this is another scene, like, on paper, I feel like is fine. This is a mustache-twirling asshole, you know, monologuing his, you know, like in the way that a lot of bad guys do. Like, the heavy is the head that wears the bad guy crown.
Heavy is the head that has the weird like lizard circles on each temple.
But Kurtwood Smith is so good at giving this thing his credibility, his character, the Kurtwood Smith credibility, and the confidence that you have in an actor like him being able to sell all of what he's saying is so apparent because the camera is just locked on him. And it stays on him and it doesn't move. And when you have an actor this good, you can do that. It makes you look great as a director.
You don't need to get the like Chakotay react to tell the audience what emotion to be experiencing at this moment.
He is spectacular in this scene and in a few others this episode. He's just so good.
I was thinking a lot about how Kurtwood Smith has such a career of playing unlikable assholes.
You probably don't think I'm a very nice guy, do you?
But that I like seeing him every time I see him. And I feel like he has that like unlikable asshole typecasting where I would still like go up to him in an airport and say, I'm a big fan of his work. You know, I would never expect that to be like a part of his real life character. You know,
he's definitely on Mount character actor.
Totally.
And like, sadly, one of the surviving Mount character actors that we have right now.
Totally. He's great. Super charismatic. And he, like, part of the pitch is like, man, if you guys only knew how much you messed my program up being on your ship that's not in the part of the galaxy it's supposed to be in, like, all of these variables I try to account for, how could anybody account for you? It's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the grudging respect of a bad guy saying, like, you almost had me there in the first half.
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you. Understood.
He is really big-dicking this extinction buffet that he's laid out for everyone. Like, in that dramatic flourish of waiting until Paris has something in his mouth before going, you know, that's the last one. That is the last dim sum that will ever be made of that kind.
It is so fun. It's like they're eating tombstones.
Mm, yeah.
And they didn't even ask what they wanted on them.
It's true.
Pepperoni and cheese.
Yeah, once the cart goes by, it just disappears forever.
Yeah.
It's sad.
But he's actually got a really nice guy pitch here. He's like, hey, so I'm in a spare Voyager. I'll let you guys go. You're non-combatants. You never wanted this. So I'm gonna hit your ship with my weapon, and it'll take it out of this timeline, and probably you'll just go home. It's professional courtesy. Like, I'm trying to get home, you're trying to get home. We're both hobos. We're all hobos.
All of this is being said at the table, and all I'm thinking about is, so is Anorax, like, pulling into orbit of these planets and then first beaming a bunch of food on board and then time shooting them out of existence? Is that what we're not seeing?
Yeah.
Because that is an amazing order to give Obrist. Like, hey, Obrist,
Find out whatever like the 4-star restaurant is on this planet. Beam some stuff up.
Yeah, find the best restaurant and beam their walk-in cooler into our walk-in cooler. And then we'll hit the big button. I wanted to know all about how this food was being stored and preserved.
Yeah, it's a question that I wondered about too.
Like Taffer's in the SUV outside of the timeship watching Anorak beam the food into the ship. And he's like, you know what? You can steal the menu items from another restaurant, but you can't steal the vibe of the place.
The concept. Your timeship has a great location, but it's totally badly lit. Nobody can see it from the highway.
When your bar and grill exists out of time, how do you expect anyone to find it?
I mean, you claim that your restaurant is outside of space and time, but the bathroom sure isn't.
Yeah.
The pitch was basically like, you tell me where Voyager is, I'm going to reset Voyager to an ideal version of its own time period. And Tom Paris is like, no deal, asshole. I can tell a ruse when I see one. And Chakotay's like, wait a second, let's hear him out.
Paris's point is well taken. Like, how can they trust him? It seems insane to do that, but Anorak makes the case that it's not about trust. It's about them both needing the same things.
I sort of wondered in this moment if Chakotay and Paris were non-verbally communicating, like they had decided who was going to play bad cop and who was going to play good cop, because it does sort of feel like Paris bad cops here. But then I was like, wait, so if Chakotay is the good cop, he's the pro-genocide cop. Ugh, fuck. Like,
right.
I mean, I guess that's as good as you can get as a cop, but...
I always thought of myself as the good cop.
You should have seen Rashawn with the hooshnack. She made me look like a peach.
I actually got into some role-playing with Rashawn wherein I would wear the police officer's uniform. It was Velcro, to be clear.
She would also wear a police officer's uniform.
The mere sight of me wearing a badge would not only flood her basement, but every basement in the quadrant.
Delta Rana 4 was a very slippery planet that day.
I don't know, Ben. Like, I would agree with that hypothesis, except that this is a bad Chakotay episode.
Yeah.
Throughout.
I was wrong to think it, but I thought it because I was like, Chakotay, you just heard the thing about all the civilizations. How are you going along with this?
If he is playing a weird game, it's that kind of like, get in good with Anorak. Because Anorak is like, look, Chakotay, I like the cut of your time jib.
Yeah.
You're someone who really understands the nuances of being a Time Lord in a way that few people do. I mean, there's one person that probably understands it outside of this room, but...
I am a traveler of all of space and time.
Way too annoying to invite to this dinner. Back on Voyager, there's a meal of a different kind happening, right? The final seven sit at a table in the mess hall where they are enjoying a kind of coffee that you couldn't even consider coffee, really, because it's like crushed up MREs.
Yeah.
Put in a coffee filter with a boiling water poured over the top. It's a nauseous pour over.
Yeah.
I call it the elixir of endurance.
Ensign Kim seems to like it.
Not bad at all.
Maybe he is the only one.
Ensign Kim eats ass, though.
Something about it reminds me of being in the womb.
Get up, Harry.
Who are you?
Harry Kim. Parents must be very proud.
Who are you?
They come as a pair.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Who else is she supposed to get chummy with?
Harry Kim.
And your mom?
Very proud.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Chummy.
And your mom?
Very proud.
Harry Kim.
Who are you?
Harry Kim.
Of course he does. So that makes sense for him. Janeway drinks vegetable broth for fun.
Right.
So should it taste good to her is the question I had in my head.
God, it does not. I like Tuvok's take the best here, though. His face and the micro expressions it goes through after consuming this.
I feel.
There's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
He's suffering greatly.
All of his other senses are enhanced because he's blind. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I also just like the blunt.
It is offensive.
7 of 9 dunk on it. Just, this fucking sucks. You're bad.
I like that naming it the elixir of endurance can mean a couple of things, like a thing that you're meant to endure being primarily the definition.
But Sting also has a guest part in this episode, and he's like, elixir of endurance, you say?
Yeah, this is a tantric coffee. Yeah. And that you have to wait a very long time to have real coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Coffee's not coffee. Coffee is sex.
Well, I've got drink. Coffee first.
Do it. Do it.
It's day 161, and they're just in bad, bad shape. They're, you know, everything is a fucking mess on the ship. They're really just like trying to patch the ship together, but being stuck in this nebula does not seem to be helping. Janeway wants to get out of the nebula.
We've got to get back into open space.
Seven does not totally think that that's a great idea and is also willing to just give voice to that.
Janeway kind of puts this in a aspirational way, right? Like, open space, guys.
Yeah.
It's why we're in Star Trek, to just be out there. No one wants to live in this nebula forever.
I mean, they've been in there for months, and she's like, we need to go find, like, make some friends, take on Anorax for real.
It's fucking crazy. They've been in there for months, and no one has found time to, like, push a broom around.
No. No, they've got much bigger fish to fry than dirt on the floor, Adam.
Yeah, that's true. So Janeway is like, fine, we're leaving tomorrow morning and no one can talk me out of it.
Later on, Tuvok and Seven are walking through the hallway and Tuvok is like, hey, so you know when the captain says a bad idea and you just say why you disagree with it without like reading the room? That's not great in a chain of command environment.
Yeah, we don't do that. I like this Tuvok Seven relationship, though, like that they are forced together in this way for this kind of exposition. They're a fun pair.
Yeah, they're a fun pair. And they kind of think in similar terms, like they're extremely procedural in their thought patterns.
Yeah.
So it's a scene that has that on the one hand, but then this incredibly intimate friendliness between them on the other hand, because as they're walking, Seven is reaching up and moving dangling cable bundles out of the way so that Tuvok doesn't walk into them. So there's the dialogue is all about this, like trying to understand an illogical situation through logic.
Right.
But the visual of the scene is this very like sweet and tender thing that is happening between them.
This is such an interesting Tuvok episode because he's never not himself, even at his most desperate.
Yeah.
And you could almost forgive that if he were to break down a little bit. He's in awful shape.
Yeah, he's torn up.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I realized in this episode that I hate this time weapon ship, Adam, it looks just like Babylon 5.
Yeah.
We get like a beauty shot of it in the next scene. It's Babylon. It looks exactly like Babylon 5. They just stole the design of Babylon 5.
The year is 2258. The name of the place is...
If I were flipping through the channels and I saw this establishing shot, I'd keep flipping.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch this show.
Yeah. Get me out of here.
Not interested. Get Bart Blockmaster off my TV. I don't need to see it.
Aboard the ship, Chakotay has sort of teamed up with Anorax and is trying to work the problem from Anorax's perspective. And he's like, got it. Rogue comet. There was a rogue comet that Voyager adjusted its course to avoid. If we go hit that with the time weapon, it will take that comet out of the equation of all history, and Voyager will never have had to adjust course. We never would have entered Krenim space. We would never have met you, man. Let's just go get that comet.
Yeah.
And Anorax is like, great idea. Hit the button. Simulate it. See what happens.
Anorax is like, not so fast. Obrist, beam aboard several dozen ice cubes from that comet to use for cocktails later. Extinct ice cubes, I feel like, are going to really add a lot to the buffet that I'm trying to enjoy in the next room.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about Anorax's genocidal mania. He is a bon vivant. He enjoys the finer things in life. He's not going to destroy everything about a culture.
You know what's weird is like how definitionally different anorexic is given his interest in consumption. Because he likes eating.
He does, yeah. he's not anorex. He's anorex.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess anorax would be like if you don't like $1,000 bills, right?
Mmm. Yeah. God, this is the sort of drunken wordplay that just really floods the FOD's basements.
Yeah, it just causes people to turn their podcasts off.
Hey, don't let your fingers slip.
Yeah.
Off the button.
Mm. Which button, Adam?
And Chakotay is like, all right. Hits the buttons and oops.
It's a fucking disaster.
Mass extinction event.
Yeah. Chakotay, through erasing this one comet, would have erased 8,000 civilizations. He probably took out Anorax's body count in one go.
Anorax does that thing like after a T-ball game when his kid kind of like has the opportunity to hit in the winning run and doesn't. Kind of gets down on one knee with Chakotay and is like, look, bud. Everyone's done it. Everyone's destroyed a thing in the universe and realized the consequences of that.
Yeah.
Take me, for instance. We used to be at war with the Rilnar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and aimed this heavy weapon at the Rilnar. Thought we were going to win the war. It was great. But it turns out the Rilnar had an antibody that our people needed to survive a plague. It killed millions of people.
So sad.
Right? So everyone makes mistakes, Chakotay. The point is you just need to dust yourself off and just keep genociding. Genocide your way out of it. Genocide your way through it.
If you've genocided yourself into a hole, just keep genociding until you come out the other side.
That's good advice. Listen to him.
I don't know if Kevin Uxbridge could get on this guy's level, because Kevin Uxbridge stopped at one, you know?
Yeah. He was one and done.
I didn't solve my problem through genocide, but I also didn't keep doing it to try to try and find my way out of the puzzle.
If Anorax could, he would totally Roshan Uxbridge his lady.
Yeah, he would, but he can't. She's in that triangle.
Yeah, all he has is hair.
Ethan, what is this? Is this a hair doll?
I was thinking maybe shoot that beam at a mirror, man. Because it seems like the beam made the fucking problems.
I'm shooting at the man in the mirror. I'm hitting him with my time beam.
Woo!
When you want to erase another race, just look in the mirror and shoot the beam. Na, 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 na.
It's really the flourishes that make that work. Not so much the lyrics.
Mm.
It's everything around the lyrics.
Yeah, I didn't delay recording by 2 hours so that I could write something.
Yeah. Yeah, smart move.
I thought of it in the moment, Adam. I thought of it and I went with it. Fuck you.
It was great.
All right.
I liked it. Why don't you believe me?
Because you're being a jerk about it.
No, I'm not.
You're being a jerk.
Not you two. I'm telling you I feel a way and you don't believe me. No one believes me.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
Yep. Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
It's day 180. A million little rocks come flying at the Voyager. They got out of the nebula and into the path of a bunch of rocks.
Yeah.
This sucks.
This is bad. Like, ordinarily, the ship has defenses for a lot of little rocks.
Yeah.
It's one of the easiest things to defend against if you're a Federation starship. Not this time.
Yeah.
Captain, with the deflector down, those micrometeoroids are beginning to erode the hull.
Emergency power to the deflector.
None available.
They got to get to deflector control. Janeway's on the case. She leaves everybody else on the bridge. I'll take care of this.
Feels like a Star Trek Generations callback here. This is the Kirk moment.
It really is. And instead of getting nexused, Janeway gets barbecued for her trouble.
Tell the doctor I'll be coming back with severe burns.
Captain.
Do it.
She knows she's going to get barbecued.
You got to use the back of your hand on the door, right?
Yeah.
I mean, kids are watching this show, Janeway.
She used that, like, what's that thing for doing push-ups where you can, like, rotate the handles on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
She used one of those to open the door.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't have even realized that the door was hot.
Yeah. This is a bad scene. She picks up a piece of paneling and like uses it as a Captain America shield before running in there. And she knows too. She knows she's going to be fucked up. I like how she psychs herself up for this.
Yeah. And in she goes and she gets it turned on, but the camera pans through the smoky, flamey room and we see a Janeway that stayed at her post.
Yeah. It really turned her into burger.
Yeah. Not a great look. And we see, you know, a similarly fucked up exterior of the ship, also looking really bad, really chewed up. And then the doc, you know, working on Janeway.
What's my condition?
You suffered third degree burns to approximately 60% of your body.
The dermal regenerator got hit by one of those micrometeors, so he's not able to fix the scars, but she's going to survive.
Right.
I was kind of expecting the scars to be way worse based on what she looked like when she was in that room.
Well, you can't see under the uniform, Ben. There's a lot of percentage of body covered with clothing.
Uh-huh.
Were you able to save my nipples, doctor?
Jesus. I was famous in the academy for my butt. Is my butt okay?
I mean, this is one of those scenes where the doc is like, look, I could partially fix your scars, but those are just the mental ones. What I can't fix are the scars in here. And he points to his own heart.
He makes himself slightly non-corporeal and points inside her body at her heart.
Right. And he's like, look, Cap, I'm going to need you to stay here a while for those injuries, the mental ones. And this suggestion does not go well for the doctor because Janeway pivots right into, well, maybe I will just shut you down.
Yeah. Pretty savage. Like the argument over whether she is fit for command seems pretty much like it's over before it starts. It seems pretty obvious that she is not.
She has metaphorically destroyed all her little ships.
Right. And he is not a human doctor. So he is like on slightly shaky footing trying to invoke regulations that give him the authority to end her command. And he kind of needs to like feel her out on whether she's actually going to kill him if he does it.
Right. Because while he's in the right, it's kind of a toothless gesture because there's no one.
There's no one to enforce it.
Yeah.
You better grab a phaser. Because before I give up command, you'll have to shoot me.
So it's tough. He invokes it and she calls his bluff and she's like, hey, like put it in your log. I eat courts martial for breakfast and we'll deal with it when we get home, man.
And also fix my nipples.
I can and I will.
A few weeks later, day 207.
Yeah. Hey, did it bug you that this wasn't an entire year when all was said and done?
Furious. Absolutely furious.
How dare they call this the year of hell?
2/3 of a year of hell.
Yeah, anyone could do that.
I could do time like that with my eyes closed.
You know what? Take off my nipples right now. Check in with me next January.
I'm not going to need them until then.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Toughened your nipples, didn't it?
Janeway and Neelix are taking inventory of the damage on a deck, and they find their way into Chakotay's quarters. And for some reason, her tricorder is set to find pocket watch.
Yeah.
It's like, it like beeps louder and louder and louder until she finds the gift that he tried to give her in the last episode.
Scan this deck for guilt. I tell you what, Ben, if I had a tricorder set for guilt, the strongest signal would be coming from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would challenge you to turn that on when I'm also in the room.
Yeah.
Let's see who it makes a louder noise next to.
How about Janeway in the action tank top?
Yeah.
She looks fucking awesome.
She's wearing the jail pipes at the end of First Contact look.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she adds the pocket watch to it.
Could be her tricorder has found some feelings for a certain tub-building first officer, right?
Mm. Yeah.
She also could have been scanning for that.
He didn't replicate a tub and defy orders and leave that in his quarters.
Now, he's got a stick you could hang a bindle on, though.
Mm.
Got to get him back on the scene.
We do.
She hangs the watch from a belt loop where it's so pendulous, like, that it would be sure to slap her in the ass and the vag as she walks, right? Like, this is an uncomfortable watch hanging maneuver.
Well, I guess we know a couple of places where she didn't have third degree burns. We can start using process of elimination, Adam.
Sounds great.
This doesn't hurt me at all.
I'm fine.
It's actually quite pleasant.
There's coffee in that birthday gift.
On the time ship, Paris is kicking Obrist's ass in some kind of board game.
Right.
The Genociders of Catan, maybe.
Me and Rashan play that all the time. We love it. The worst part is familiarizing yourself with all the rules.
Yeah. European resource management games. Just love them. I'm a big fan of the Pyrrhic victory as a strategy.
This is kind of a con by Paris. Paris is trying to get in with Obrist.
Yeah, he's like that guy in every prison camp movie about World War II that is like the dude that can get stuff by buttering up the guards.
Yeah.
And he's really starting to kind of understand Obrist's deal. And Obrist tells a story about like, yeah, I used to like, you know, celebrate my brother's birthday whenever it came around. But I realized he died like hundreds of years ago. And
yeah,
it felt a little sad and pathetic after a certain point.
When you're on a time ship, all holidays feel hollow, right?
Wow. That's why they probably call them that.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like Paris really has a lot in common with Obrist. Obrist fucking hates his job.
Yeah.
That was Paris not too long ago.
Yeah, Paris has been there.
Yeah.
He's done that.
Yeah.
He finds Chakotay and he's like, dude, great news. I've got this Obrist guy eating out of my hand. We've got a plan, man. We can take out the time crystal that runs the ship. And once that happens, like, the ship is in real space-time and it's fucking weak. Like, any normal weapon could totally jack this ship up.
I gotta tell you, the scene is a low-key, awful look for Anorax. Because who is leaving Paris and Chakotay alone to just conspire like this?
I mean,
he may be a man out of time, but he's not very smart.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just that he's like been doing this for hundreds of years now and is like super unused to having guests aboard. Like,
yeah,
he has lost the ability to think through the implications.
Like the first time you socialize after the pandemic.
Right, right.
You're like, I thought I liked parties. Turns out I do not.
Anorax just thinks about time and its feelings all the time, and that's it, you know?
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that
robe enlargement.
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself? No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Things just taste better when someone else makes them, right? It doesn't matter if it's a sandwich or a cocktail. There's just something that makes those things a bit more enjoyable. If I wanted a meal made by a chef, I could leave the house and go to a restaurant, or I could put a Factor meal into the microwave. That's because all of Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef crafted and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. They have a menu of 35 options that changes weekly, and they've got 60 add-on options every week, like breakfast, on the go, lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Head to factormeals.com/scarves50 and use the code SCARVES50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code SCARVES50 at factormeals.com/SCARVES50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
To get that
black mark now.
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Did you feel like these roles could or should have been reversed? Because how is Chakotay, of all people, not down with mutiny? Like, you'd think that Chakotay as Maquis would be riding for this and Paris would be the company man argument, but it's not.
I mean, I think Chakotay's argument is like, we might be able to end this and use the time weapon one last time to like solve his problem and solve our problem. And Chakotay is fucked up in this scene, but I think that he thinks his way is the easier and better way out. But yeah, it's fucked up.
Like, Anorax is an enlightened man.
The timing of this couldn't be better because he's like in the middle of threatening Paris at the end of this. Like, well, we can go back to Maquis rules if you want.
Chakotay is like, I punch people in the face for dinner.
Yeah. But the next scene is a well-timed genocide. Like, he thought he had like kind of talked Anorax out of the genociding things to solve his problems mindset.
Yeah.
And was like, let's think about like asteroids and comets and shit that nobody's going to miss.
Right.
And point the weapon at that. And Anorax is like, no, dog, this is what we do here. We genocide. When we come up with a cool idea for a genocide, we do it.
As a degenerate gambler, I definitely saw some of that in Anorax here. Like, he's got a hunch. He thinks he can beat the machine or whatever.
Right.
And he starts making bets.
When time offers you an opportunity.
All I do is
bets. No matter.
And he also believes like that kind of gambler superstition, like the world is out to get me, like time is mad at me personally, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel that.
Like when he busts out and it doesn't go the way he wants it to.
I know.
It feels like cosmic to him.
Yep. That's how it feels.
It's silly.
I mean, this is done all so casually. And I think that's part of the point, right?
Yeah.
Anorax is like, I'm following a hunch. We're just going to do this thing and see what happens. And Paris is like,
am I making any sense here?
And Anorax is like, not on the bridge, man.
And like throws it in Chakotay's face. Like, this is fucked up. Did you not see what just happened on the bridge?
Yeah.
And Chakotay's like, you're not on my time level, man. Like, you don't see things the way I do. Me and Anorax, we're like this.
Mm-hmm.
We're like two fingers crossed with a bunch of hair wrapped around it.
Yeah.
We're like hairy fingers.
We're hairy fingers with a galaxy brain. And
yeah.
We just see time for what it really is.
This kind of moves Chakotay's needle, though, because Chakotay confronts Anorax.
He's like, I was just trying to talk Paris out of this whole mutiny thing, man. And now you do this. You make me look like a fucking asshole.
Right. Taffer's brought in the best negotiator in the quadrant to talk to Paris.
You don't even train your staff.
Chakotay is a real every species matters type, and Anorax thinks no species matter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a wild tension to experience.
Because everything Anorax is doing is about getting Kiana Prime colony back on the board.
Like the bumper sticker on Chakotay's car has like a bunch of weird colored stripes where the flag stripes would be.
Right.
And Anorax's sticker is like a blank sticker.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even know a sticker's on his car.
Why did you even take the resale value of your car down if it's just an empty sticker.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. I mean, what it should be is like a hair sticker.
Yeah. I mean, say what you want about the tenets of Chakotay's religion. At least it's an ethos.
Chakotay knows the score, though. He's like, if I were to say something like Kiana Prime, that mean anything to you? And Anorax is like, how do you know that? And Chakotay is like, well, you've given me in Paris full run of your ship. Like, we can do anything here for some reason.
We've looked through your computers. We've found all the things. And I know that that's like the thing that you're really trying to get back. And
I think it's strange that you have a hair doll on your desk. I'm just going to say it. The hair doll's weird. I don't like it.
I didn't make that. It fell out of your hair that way. And I want it back.
Give me it back.
I want it back.
And the way you like caress the triangle.
Yeah.
So, that's weird.
This is all I have left of her.
So did... Here's the thing. In order to get the hair doll, Anorax would have to understand the potential of his weapon. Like, he would have had to get the lock of hair before being captain of this ship, right? Like, so many meals of food that he steals before cultures that he genocides.
Yeah.
He has to steal the hair and then go on the mission. And then he would have had to realize that he killed his wife in the process.
He got aboard the ship. He said, beam a lock of hair into this triangle. And then we're going to go fly away. And
beam as much of my wife's hair into the walk-in cooler as you can.
We're going to kill that species. And we'll come back and see if she's okay.
Taffer has inspected the walk-in cooler of the time ship, and he is not happy with the amount of hair in the walk-in.
If an inspector walked in today, you'd be shut down! And you deserve it!
This is disgusting! No one wants to see this!
Shut this kitchen down! No one eats here! You're gonna kill somebody!
I thought immediately that this Kiana Prime issue was a perfect wedge that you could drive between Anorax and his crew, because they may be bought in for the, like, make our species the all-powerful people in this part of space mission. Mm-hmm. For sure, they don't really give a shit about Anorax's fucking wife, right?
No. No one does. That's what's so insane.
Yeah.
This is not a great scene for Anorax, because he's like, look, I'm not only a man with a hair doll, but I also feel like time has moods and feelings. So if you can't get on my level, I don't know. I don't know, man.
Maybe you're not as into this whole genocide thing as I thought you were. I mean,
yeah.
And if you're not, like, maybe you should go.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really harshing my buzz here, man.
So Chakotay has finally kind of let the scales fall from his eyes, and Tom Paris is able to rope him into the start a mutiny and blow up the Time Core plan. But the blowing up the Time Core thing is a one-shot deal, because it's impossible to destroy a temporal core on a starship unauthorized.
As bad of a Chakotay episode as this is a really great Paris episode, I think. He's got the power V going.
Yeah.
He's got great ideas. He's proven right, I feel like.
Totally.
When all is said and done. And he's won the argument, I feel like, with Chakotay.
And he, like, laid all the groundwork in the background. Like, he got Obrist to give him a radio.
Yeah, what the fuck is Chakotay doing? He's just palling around with Anorax?
Yeah. Chakotay, you pick bad friends, man.
You fucked up, Chakotay.
Between Anorax and Seska, you've got a terrible assessment of people.
Oh, hey, guess what, Chakotay? Anorax is pregnant. And guess who the father is? Jesus, Chakotay, keep it in your fucking pants.
I've still got a lot to learn.
So, it's day 226. The Voyager has succeeded in convincing some aliens to help them out. I don't know how they did that when they pulled up in a bucket.
You have got... This is the moment that strains the most credulity here, is by not seeing the scene where Janeway's like, you're just going to have to believe that we've got a chance here.
Yeah, come fight a war with me. I'll be an ally. I will fight by your side.
Yeah.
In my just as good spaceship.
Yeah. This is not a good look. It's the Nahidran and the Mawasi.
Yeah.
And they're down. They're down for the cause.
They're down for the cause. We never see a Nahidran. We never see a Mawasi.
No.
The crew kind of splits up. Some people go to Mawasi ships. Some people go to Nahidran ships.
The crew's like, we don't even know what they look like. Like, are you sure? Are you sure we can just beam over there?
Yeah, what if they don't breathe the same stuff as us? Should we ask before we do this?
Maybe all they breathe is pink nebular gas. Do I need to wear a mask for this?
Kim's like, I want to wait and have somebody else beam over first just in case there's nebula gas over there.
What do you make of us never, like, they made a big deal about seeing, like, Janeway's shattered teacup.
Yeah.
Why don't you show us that clarinet?
Mm.
In what condition is the clarinet in Ensign Kim's quarters? Is it playable?
Yeah, that would have been a nice, like, elegiac moment before Kim goes away on the mission. Like, you know, like a... There's kind of an old naval tradition of a captain walking the deck of the ship on the eve of battle.
Sure is.
There's an old naval tradition of the ensign going to his quarters and playing his bent in half clarinet.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, you play that clarinet one last time, Ensign Kim. And you leave it behind. Go hang out with the Nahidran.
I used to live in North Brooklyn, and one of my favorite things was when somebody would open up a Nahidran on the street in the summer and the kids would play in it.
Such a classic move.
Yeah.
So they leave Janeway to fly Voyager solo. Like, that's how the split up works.
Yeah. She's talking about it in terms of going down with the ship.
Yeah, there's no covering this up. She's pretty transparent about the idea of augering the ship in at some point.
You can see it on a few of their faces that they're going to speak up in protest, but the doc is right behind her and he does the like finger across the throat, like, just let her go, man.
Kim is like, so I should take the clarinet is what you're saying, because the chances that the Nahidran could replicate that, probably not good, right?
She's like, yes, and take this pad that I got from Tom Paris's quarters. It's labeled tax documents. He said that he'd want it if I ever died.
Do you have any idea how valuable the last porn in the quadrant is?
It's all fucking aliens.
It's the nuclear porn suitcase. Guard this with your life.
This is the only thing that's kept crew morale going as long as it has.
You actually shouldn't touch it with your bare hands.
Here, take these tongs.
Oh, man.
It's the spot gloves. Wrath of God.
So the plan is this. They're going to attack. They're attacking the timeship.
Yeah.
The reason they feel emboldened to do this is that they got a message from Paris from the timeship orchestrating this whole thing.
They're going to shut down the temporal core. The Starfleet will attack. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Janeway talks about the Voyager like it's a classic Camaro, and Tuvok is like, I do not understand car culture. This is just a place where we worked. I have no emotional connection to this office building.
Yeah. She gives him a goodbye hug that was really sweet. I mean, like, it was sweet of her. It doesn't mean anything to him.
I don't know, man. This moment really touched me. Like, people saying goodbye in the ways that make sense for them. It was meaningful that Tuvok actually, like, did the embrace part.
Yeah. I mean, he's stiff as a board, but he does hug back.
I mean, there's definitely some daylight between those groins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the middle school teacher came through with the flashlight and made sure.
One of my favorite shots of this episode, like in an episode that had a lot of really good shots, was when Tuvok leaves and we stay on Janeway and that one unbroken single that like follows her around the horseshoe into the chair.
Yeah.
It was a nice moment because like in an episode with so much action, to just have a moment to breathe and be in a moment, I think was important.
I thought it was great.
And this was that moment.
Day 257.
Not quite a year still, huh?
Still well shy of a year.
Hey, are you well shy of... How many shots do you think was in your pitcher, by the by?
How many shots? A shot is an ounce and a half?
Well, not in my house. It's two. But I'm saying like... How drunk are you feeling? I'm about to polish off. I just did my last refill, basically.
I still see. There's sidecar there.
All right, let's get this thing going. Here, I'm gonna simultaneously do this.
So Adam is drinking from the straw while pouring from the pitcher into the glass so that he can pour out the last of the pitcher while not overflowing his glass.
I did it.
Wow.
That was a great move.
Very impressive. Yeah, I do need to do a refill. I'll show you my pitcher.
Wow, look at that.
I've had quite a lot.
It's your body. Who am I to judge?
Do we have different TNG tiki glasses? We have different ones. I have a red and a brown.
Mine is a TOS tiki glass. It's Kirk.
How about that? Which Kirk? Pine Kirk or Shat Kirk?
I think it's Shat Kirk, but it's stylized enough that I suppose you could make the case for either.
This is fun. I'm having fun.
Fun to do bad things.
My friend Miriam got me this. She works at the Skirball Center where they had the big Trek exhibit. And,
how about that?
She saved me one.
How nice.
Yes. So I would say I put 12 ounces of alcohol in this.
God damn.
If I put one.
I think your drink is stronger because while I had overproof bourbon, like the house shot in my household is 2 ounces. And even though the recipe called for 1.5s, I was pouring twos.
Yeah.
So I did 2 4 times.
But how overproof is it? Because everything I did was 80 proof.
The best I could, I mean, is what is the qualification for overproof? Because the bourbon I chose was 100.
Oh, so that means you're...
Because I don't have anything like specifically overproof. I just chose the highest test bourbon that I got.
Yeah, but that's 25% more alcohol per ounce than 80 proof, so...
Oh, and I also poured 25% more total alcohol by volume
in here. Yeah, I mean, somebody can make a spreadsheet and figure this out, but...
You know what? Wendy would be great at this.
Oh, yeah.
She's great at spreadsheets.
This is one of the things that we discovered after we hired her was like...
Hey, Wendy, can you make a spreadsheet for how I'm destroying my life?
Yeah.
And just the rate of that?
Make that spreadsheet and then just share it publicly. Like, make one of those Google Sheets where you can... Anybody
Wendy,
that has the link can look at it.
2 columns. Give us 2. 1 for me and 1 for Ben.
How many ounces did you have?
8.
So you had 8 total ounces of overproof?
8 ounces of overproof, yeah.
Yeah, wait, so I don't want to do the math, but I think we're probably really close.
No one can do the math. It's impossible. Look, it's not about math. It's how you feel.
Mm.
And I feel great. As good as I felt in a long time.
I'm glad you feel great, man. That's why we came here to do this.
Yeah. Sometimes you just get one for a drunk. You just aim your ship right at the time ship.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
It's day 257.
Here's what's so weird. Like, the show is like, hey, there's a passage of time here. But Janeway sits down in a chair.
And then a month later, they...
31 days ago. and she's in the same chair. She hasn't moved.
Yeah. That was a long time. She was just sitting there.
They should have to peel her off of that thing.
I mean, like, we've talked about how, like, they need all of the crew on Voyager to keep their ship going. And the ship is fucked up now.
Yeah.
What was she doing the entire time?
Do you think maybe sometimes I could come over to the Nahidran or Mawasi ship and just take a shower or whatever? Because that's the thing, right?
Yeah. Like, can you use the transporter system on their ship to beam the poops out of me? Because our transporter chief is in an escape pod somewhere deep in Krenim space.
The martyr complex goes deep with Janeway because she could have some comfort in these 31 days. It does not appear as though that's happened.
Mm. So the mechanics of this fight are that everybody has been given the technology of these temporal shields that the Voyager figured out that saved them from the time weapon the first time. So when they go to attack Anorax's ship, Anorax is like, who gives a shit? Like, we're getting attacked. Yeah. We're outside of space and time. Like, it doesn't matter.
Not a big deal.
And then it is communicated to him that these people have temporal shielding. And I felt like Chakotay kind of fucked up again here.
This is such an awful Chakotay episode.
because he's like, Anorax, like, Janeway wouldn't be attacking you unless she knew she could hurt you.
Yeah.
That's just, like, not how she rolls. Like, don't tell him that.
Shut the fuck up, Chakotay. I feel like this is very Crimson Tidy here, too, because Obrist is Webs, and he's, like, surreptitiously typing stuff at a station.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta have Webs. Webs is the key.
Yeah. And Anorax and Chakotay are just yucking it up, and then Paris comes in and is like, Lippin's Honor stallions are black when they're born.
Right. For some reason, Paris, totally alone, has access to the ship systems. This is what Obrist was doing at a station.
Yeah.
Was kind of transferring them over to him.
Yeah. So he is working on fucking up the temporal core, and they go in for the attack. And right off the bat, two of the Nahedron vessels get destroyed. And it's like, wait, so the shields don't work at all?
Did they know they would just be, like, I don't want to say human. I mean, the very term is racist, but they were kind of human shields, weren't they?
Wow. Yeah.
They don't even get the dignity of an on-screen moment.
Yeah, they're just gone. They're gone from time.
Oh, you know what? I bet we know who was on those ships, too, because when Janeway divvied up the remaining crew, I wasn't thinking about who was over there, but they were split between those two ships.
Yeah. Is there still another Nahedron ship? Maybe they're on that other one? I guess it doesn't matter, right?
I can't tell the difference between a Nahedron and a Mawasi.
Whoa.
I know. I know. Yeah. Look, I feel like I'm in a safe space. I'm with the Friends of DeSoto. I could admit that.
I think the Greatest Gen Facebook group is going to take great umbrage with this position that you've bravely struck out.
Hey, you know what? I can't tell the difference.
Wow.
And furthermore, I hate both of them.
God damn.
Our course is locked in.
Do it.
Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
The attack does not go super well. And it turns out when Anorax converts over to conventional weapons to fight back, the conventional weapons are also super powerful.
Yeah. I mean, against a Voyager that fucking sucks shit right now.
Yeah. Janeway's like looking out a force field directly into space.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of ship hits the Voyager, but they get hit real bad.
I love this sequence.
Yeah.
Like this mid-air collision.
Yeah.
Is so rugged.
Another thing that is like very much a couldn't have done it in the pre-digital era.
In the same way that, like, cutting yourself is less painful than, like, if you're using a rasp grater and you grate yourself in a way that, like, doesn't break the skin. That's what happens to Voyager here. It's grated by this other ship, and it's so painful looking.
It only breaks the skin in one place. There's a hurl on the bridge.
Yeah.
And their weapons are knocked out. All of the ships that went to attack the time ship eventually are out of commission and can't attack. And the captain orders everybody to drop their temporal shields. And she says the craziest line of this two-part episode.
If that ship is destroyed, all of history might be restored.
Biggest if in the history of ifs.
I'm almost positive my nipples will come back if I crash the Voyager into the time ship.
Yeah. Her conviction is that if they undo that ship, all of the damage it's done will also be undone.
Yeah.
Because something, something time paradox.
But also they're pot committed here. Like they're done for anyway.
Yeah.
What else could she do?
True.
It's a hunch that I feel like has a lot of merit. Like, if you're going to gamble, I think this is a reasonable gamble, given their position.
Catherine Janeway was the captain of a Federation starship for several years.
257 days. She lost both of her nipples and destroyed her ship crashing into another time ship. I dare you to do better. This episode's going to alienate a lot of people.
See if your butt survives, though, because hers did.
Yeah. Hey, we're having a lot of laughs about Janeway here. This is a great Janeway episode. I fucking ride for her so hard. Yeah. Like, her badassness throughout and up to this moment,
yeah,
I am totally into. Fuck yeah. Like, absolutely ram the ship into the time ship. Yeah. Do it.
Fuck them.
Yeah.
If we're going down, we're all going down. In a scene that very much mimics the teacup crashing to the ground in part one, Anorak runs into his office to see his triangle full of hair fall off of his desk and crash, and the little lock of hair phases out of existence before his very eyes.
Oh, what's he gonna jack it with now?
It was all for nothing.
There are so many audio clips to pull from Slackers having to do with this hair doll thing.
I love you.
It sucks. He's devastated. It's all he had left of his wife.
Yeah.
It's the only way he can get himself, you know, over the top, over his skis.
The ship blows up. It's another Praxis-style explosion with a wave that generates outward. And as it dissipates, we get a captain's log and a pristine Starship Voyager entering the frame.
Yeah. So pristine. There's no bump moment of like, whoa, what was that? Like, no one recognizes that there's anything out of sorts here.
There is no Year of Hell. The Year of Hell never happened, Adam.
Janeway's log. All is normal with my nips.
I'm just on the bridge thinking about how great these nips are doing. Not to mention my butt.
Well, I'd say this is cause for celebration.
A vessel is approaching off the port bow, Captain.
Uh-oh, Ben. It's the Krenim. And it's that guy from the first episode. The guy we hate.
The guy, ironically, who has no hair, which is also symbolic because of the disappearance of the hair in the previous scene.
Wow. God, I love that film paper. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Nice paper.
Yeah. And she's like, hey, what's up, man? And he's like, hey, you know, this is like disputed territory. You're in Krenim space, but, you know, keep your head down and travel on through, and you shouldn't have any problems.
I love how professional this interaction is.
Yeah.
He's like someone at a gate at a facility. Like, hey, just got to check IDs and then wave you through or whatever. Like,
she's like, we're just dropping off a pizza.
Pepperoni and cheese.
And so they decide to go around Krenim space, given this warning.
Yeah. And then the astrometrics lab is going to come online. That's going to be great for them.
Yeah. Chakotay's like, hey, let's do some kind of party in honor of the astromixer. In honor of the astromixers. In honor of the blah, blah, blah lab.
Sounds great.
We'll replicate some tiki drinks to celebrate.
Why don't we smush a bottle against the astrometrics lab? Have a great time.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
Button on the episode. Oh my God. He's alive.
You really recognize what a big hair freak Anorak is in this scene. Because he's made his wife grow it out long. He has her come over to his side of the desk and he's like, just choke me with that hair.
She wraps her hair around his neck twice. It's that long.
I'm Kurtwood Smith. I am really into hair.
Oh, man.
He's such a workaholic.
Yeah, come on, man. It's breakfast time. Why are you fucking working this hard?
I saw myself in Anorak. I saw a dark future for me.
Wow.
He's there working on his time computations. I mean, does it matter? Does any of this matter, Ben? I'm asking about our show. I'm not asking about the episode. But I'm also asking about the episode because the suggestion is Anorak is going to come up with the time ship eventually.
Yeah.
And this didn't change anything.
Or did it?
Yeah.
Are you asking me if I like this episode?
I know you don't want to do it. Do it.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Yeah, did you like it?
No.
You like that?
No. The end sucks. I think that the end is a total deus ex machina. It's like a bad Outer Limits twist ending.
Oh!
I think that there's so much to like about this episode. There's so much about the production of it that is exciting and good and fun.
But don't go to Anorax's house, right?
I don't think they stick the landing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really disappointed me. That button really made me feel a way about the whole thing.
Shit. I didn't love it. But I loved the episode and the two-parter as it was. I feel like this could be an entire sci-fi series. The idea of people cruising around in a time ship trying to make things right.
Yeah.
It could be a whole thing.
Yeah. It could for sure be a season of Discovery, right?
The idea of stuffing this into two episodes is interesting to me. It sure does seem like a Discovery season for sure.
Yeah.
And God, you're right. The ending sucks. I wish we didn't get that. But as a counterpoint, Janeway has never been a better captain or a more interesting character.
Yeah.
Or hotter than she's been the last two episodes. Like when she turns it into totally focused captain mode.
Yeah.
There's something really inspiring about that in a way that like that is a special gear for a starship captain. And she's got a different way about it. And it works for me. I think she's great.
Yeah. I wish it wasn't so zero-sum with Chakotay, though. Like, it kind of feels like they thought they had to, like, really take Chakotay down several pegs in order to make Janeway seem great.
This episode is an atrocity for Chakotay. It is really bad.
Yeah.
We've almost downgraded him to, like, season one Chakotay as a result. It's not good.
I don't want that to happen. He was on such a great trend.
Yeah.
And then he had that cool mustache.
God. What about the mustache?
The second the mustache comes off, Chakotay loses it.
Yeah, bring back the stash. I think they could really do it.
Man, I would love to see somebody cosplay mustache Chakotay.
Bring it back.
Wow. Well, it's been an emotional roller coaster. I'm finishing the last of my blender drink.
Wow, you have? I've been talking too much. I got to take this thing to the dome.
Yeah. Do you want to check the priority one inbox, see what's going on in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is that's cask strength right there in the P1 inbox.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a promotional nature. Someone paid to have a message on a drunkisode.
Oh, I feel bad for them.
This poor bastard. Here's that message. Remember when author Robert C. Murray sent a P1 to TGD to tell FODs about his books? The Titan Run trilogy? Probably not. Because like Kern, he forgot to mention his name. Robert C. Murray. Yes, that Robert C. Murray.
Wow, not the other one.
Rob loves TGG/D. I kind of like that as an abbreviation for both shows. That's fun.
TGG/D.
Yeah. So much that he threw more scarves to his fave pod hosts to advertise his books that have spaceships. People in spaceships and people leaving spaceships to do stuff on planets, not Earth, in the future. The whole ebook trilogy is $6. $6?
Damn, that is a
that is
deal.
Nothing.
Robert, you gotta raise your prices, man.
See TitanRunTrilogy.space for more. Wow. So here's the thing. I'm looking straight into the camera right now.
Yeah, well, everybody at home can see that.
Friends of DeSoto, there is $60 of booze in my drink. I think you, I think you've got $6 to drop on TitanRunTrilogy.space, the place where you can find amazing sci-fi books by the Robert C. Murray. Holy shit, the Robert C. Murray.
You really pour top shelf shit for a Tiki episode when you actually participate in one.
My overproof bourbon is the good stuff, man.
Man.
I need to get cheap overproof is what I need.
Yeah, choverproof, they call it.
Yeah.
Adam, our next priority one message is from Mark Allen, It's to Adam and Ben as thanks for great pod. It goes like this. In 2015, I started my 5-year mission to watch all Star Trek everywhere. In 2020, I discovered The Greatest Generation and I've been marathoning it while writing my dissertation. For me, Jake and Nog became roomies and Kern is the most recent impression. I'm interested in seeing when I catch up to this message and will send another when I do.
Whoa.
Wow.
So we'll hear from Mark Allen in like 2 years.
Yeah. I hope Mark Allen isn't writing their dissertation about us and our bad impressions.
I hope that's what Mark Allen's doing.
Wow.
Look, here's the thing about dissertations and about all the college papers. It doesn't fucking matter. Just write something that makes logical sense in the context of your paper and it's fine. Any professor is going to respect that.
I was interpreting
this. Here's what you need to do. The confidence in your paper convictions is what's going to get you that 4.0.
I was kind of interpreting dissertation as maybe a PhD level dissertation in this context. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But
maybe it is.
I feel like it might actually matter when it's for your doctorate.
I mean, how often do you think of your college coursework, Ben?
All the time. It haunts me to this day.
I wish I could go back. Do it all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, our final priority one message is from Gabe of Starbase 69.
Wow. Nice.
There you go. It's to Ben and Adam. The message goes like this. Serendipity demanded that I follow up on my previous shout out to Starbase 69.
Nice.
On the day that P1 dropped. The reference is to the episode called All Hat and No Loaf. Hmm. I got results indicating that my brain tumor got dextroremicked by radiation and shrunk by about 90%.
Wow.
Compared to before treatment.
Fuck yeah.
Thanks for keeping me laughing through it all. Gabe, hey, I'm no doctor. I think the radiation's working, buddy.
Dude.
I would keep doing that.
That fucking rules. Congratulations, Gabe.
Yeah, man. Shrink that fucking tumor.
Fuck that shit. Fuck it. Fuck that tumor.
Yeah. Piece of shit. Jeez, get that shit out of there.
Yeah, get that fucking rotten piece of shit out of there. Get that rotten garbage out of your fucking head.
Yeah, you get that tumor out of there. Like, you ask for it. Ask the surgeon for it. Flush it down the fucking toilet.
Yeah. Throw it on the ground and stomp on it.
Yeah, that's what it deserves.
Have a dog pee on it and then flush it down the toilet.
Gabe, you rule.
Yeah.
Don't take any shit from this tumor.
Yeah. Seriously. Kick that tumor in his fucking teeth. I love it. If you would like to get a priority one message on the show, the way to do it is by arranging it at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's a great way to help keep the lights on around here while also supporting yourself.
What?
I mean, like, you know. A commercial one. You support yourself while supporting us.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works.
Or like making your friend's day by supporting them.
That's good.
You know, on their birthday or whatever.
It's support in Miriam directions.
Yeah. It's like that gif of Spider-Mans pointing at each other, mm-hmm. but of support instead of Spider-Mans.
Yeah, it's all Spider-Men. That's what they are.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
If you've got a character in an episode that can't be reasoned with, can't be controlled, can't be contained, busts out of a uniform,
whoa,
wears a watch that smashes their vag and butt whenever they walk anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, my Shimoda is Janeway. She is a rogue agent.
Yeah.
She's out there doing what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And I want to do it with her. She rules.
It's fun to do bad things.
It's fun to do whatever you want. And that's what Janeway's doing. This is Captain's prerogative shit. She doesn't want to drink this shitty coffee. She doesn't want to keep this shit in this fucking nebula any minute longer than she needs to.
No.
She's ready to smash that time ship. And I think to me, that's what makes her the Shimoda.
True. Triple true.
What about you, Ben?
I think for the reason that it seems like he is pulling the most isolinear chips out of the episode, I've got to give it to Chakotay.
Yeah, he is totally doing that. He fucking sucks this episode.
Yeah, it's Shimoda for the bad reason, not for the fun reason.
Yeah, yeah, dark Shimoda.
He's my dark Shimoda for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad about it. I hope he has a better rest of the season.
Yeah.
Because the beginning of season four has been a rocky road for our friend.
I mean, I think bringing back the beard would go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring the facial hair back online. Like the nacelles on the starship.
Yeah.
I'm really close to finishing the last sips of my drink, Adam.
I'm fucking smushed right now.
Yeah? Good.
Yeah.
Are you too smushed to type gach.biz/game into your browser?
Oh. Nope. I'll do that right now.
Well, Adam, the next episode of Star Trek Voyager, Season 4, Episode 10, Random Thoughts. Well, on shore leave, on a planet of telepaths, B'Elanna is arrested for a murder that is blamed on her violent thoughts.
Wow. I mean, this seems like something that Paris would know a little bit about.
Mm.
Given his experience on that one planet with the super foxy lady with the dog.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
No stranger to the false accusation.
That's what I'm saying.
That's an interesting comparison. I wonder if it'll come up in the episode.
Ben, I have gone to the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets. That's not what it's called. Ben, I've gone to the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker, where I have glimpsed our runabout on square 12.
Yeah.
It's a Coco Nono episode.
Sure is.
That's why we did all this.
Yeah, that's why we are the way we are right now.
If I were to roll a 6, it would mean a Quark's Bar episode next time around. And why not just do that? Like, why not just lean into whatever this is that we're trying to do here?
We can't.
It doesn't matter.
We can't.
None of this matters. I'm gesturing around the room. None of this matters.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Don't roll a 6, please.
I'm going to roll the die. I have only rolled a 1.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Classic Adam roll. We're on square 13. It's a regular old episode. It's a dry out episode, really.
Lucky 13.
Yeah.
Ugh,
yeah.
Thank goodness.
That's us. Yeah, man. Let's hydrate for the next episode.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, right?
That does sound like a good idea, Adam.
Mm-hmm. You know what sounds like the best idea?
Stopping this.
My life is a mess, and I can't get off this ride, whatever it is.
Yeah.
There are no brakes for us.
No.
It's all gas, no brakes. That's what the greatest gen is.
Yeah.
If that matters to you, the sacrifice that Ben and I make in order to bring this fucking shit to bear every week in a dependable way.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org/join is how you support that effort.
Yeah.
It keeps the high-proof bourbon in our glasses. It gives us a reason to keep going.
It does.
It really matters to support the show. So thank you to everyone who does.
We really appreciate it. If you don't have it in the budget right now for something like that, we would appreciate a nice review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. That also really helps.
Maybe if you just stood on a street corner wearing a sandwich board with the URL to the website, that would help.
Yeah. So many things would help, Adam.
I guess.
Hey, thanks to Wendy Pretty, the producer and sometimes editor of this program.
I wish Wendy were doing the credits right now.
Should we just make Wendy do the credits?
Why don't you put her in charge?
Thanks to Adam Raguzio, who made the original theme song of this show after the example set by Dark Materia, who was kind enough to let us use the Picard song all those years ago.
A Dark Materia who is cool with us using it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We got to thank Bill Tilly, the Card Daddy, who runs our social media at Greatest Trek on Insta and Twitter. Use the hashtag GreatestGen. Go to DrunkShimoto.com. Get involved with a group of cool Friends of DeSoto. There's Greatest Gen Facebook. There's Greatest Gen Reddit. There's so many cool groups of people out there that want to be friends with you and want to talk about their love of Star Trek and their tolerance of me and Adam for some reason. And with that, we will be back at you next episode with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager where Adam and Ben are falsely accused of a murder. And this turns into a true crime podcast.
Oh, I'm getting away with it.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
We were falsely accused. I mean, of course we're going to get away.
I mean, you're married to a lawyer.
Yeah.
I think that probably puts you at an advantage. You think she'd defend me? I doubt it.
She's not that kind of lawyer. We would not want her defending us.
Yeah. You know what? She'd probably let us burn.
Yeah.
It'd be better for her if she did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She would. It'd be like a balloon with a lead weight that suddenly got snipped off the bottom of it.
Yeah.
She would rocket to the top of American society.
Yeah.
Make it so. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Make it so. Make it so. Jean-Luc Picard.
Okay, but you be quiet, Hair Doll.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.